This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Fake the Nation, episode 259.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where, as the most enduring symbol of American patriotism, we gather all the hot dogs in anticipation of a hot vax 4th of July. I am your host, Nagin Farsad. And can I tell you guys, the other day I saw the most heartwarming scene. I was coming back from a gig at night, so it was maybe like 10 p.m., and I walked by a line of like really hot young people showing their vaccine passports to get into the club. I mean, folks, dancing and drunkenness are back. It's morning again in America. This is so exciting. Today, we're going to talk about COVAX and how there are so many places that don't have vaccine passports and where people can't go to the club. But we'll also talk about Free Britney and finally, a commencement speech that tells you not to do your homework. I am joined for the very first time. I'm so excited to have him on the show. He's a writer, a podcaster. He's also co-writer of a new graphic novel called Bubble, which is on sale now for pre-order and available on July 13th. And I'm so excited to read it. And I'm so excited to have him on. I've just heard wonderful things. Folks, it's Jordan Morris. Hey, Jordan.
Hi, hi. Great to be here in the virtual club.
Club. I am also joined for the manyth time. This comedian, he's a podcaster. He's just an all-around fantastic guy who always dresses dapperly, even in the middle of a heat dome. He is the host of the podcast The Political Orphanage and author of the forthcoming book Los Angeles is Hideous, Poems About an Ugly City, which I really can't wait to read. Folks, it's Andrew Heaton. Hey, Andrew.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you for having me on.
Guys, let's get into it with topic number one. So let's talk about COVAX. COVAX was a plan to distribute the vaccines for places that needed it globally, right? So rich countries would pay for the development and delivery, poorer countries would benefit from it, but we would actually all benefit from it because pandemics don't understand GDP or borders. COVAX was meant to be basically a global solution to a global problem, but it basically failed to deliver. There were supposed to be, you know, 172 million doses of the vaccine delivered by this time. They've only administered 72 million. So the failure of delivery has been large. I guess my first question to you is why?
You know, there was a quote in an article you sent us that kind of sums it up, and maybe kind of sums up a lot about what's gone on. And it is this: rich countries behaved worse than anyone's worst nightmares.
Yes, so. Gavin Yarny at Duke University said that, and we read this article in The Lancet about COVAX and the failures of COVAX. And I totally highlighted that same quote. It is exactly that. And Heaton, what did you think he meant by that? What were the rich countries doing?
It really made me feel guilty because I've had 8 vaccines, and now that I think about it. That is really not
vaccine
necessary.
Hoarding.
I want to get into those clubs where the hot young people,
right?
Attention.
If
and I thought I showed them my passport, just yeah. laden with vaccine stickers that I get in. So my understanding of the major problem with this, and it's fairly complicated, and I'm not super aware of the mechanisms in place with COVAX or its various funding mechanisms, but my understanding is that the problem with it wasn't funding, that COVAX actually has the money. They have the money right now to hand to pharmaceutical companies to purchase the vaccines. The problems are that there's a limited amount of companies making vaccines. Very few of them, I think none of them, are located in the third world that really needs it right now, although the largest vaccine manufacturer is in India. But what's happening is, as the vaccines are coming out, rich countries are immediately buying them and hoarding them. And that's the big problem from this, is it's not that we are refusing to provide information about how to make vaccines or anything like that. It's that we're hoarding them. And the logic of
Andrew, just to also add, not only hoarding them, but we have laws for vaccines that get developed in our own countries or manufactured in our own countries. Various countries have these laws that you can't even export them until the government says, okay, now you can export them. So even if a pharmaceutical country wanted to export them and engage, you know, in business with another country, they couldn't.
Gotcha. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. It seems like also, you know, something that's going on is that some Pfizer vaccines were approved, but, you know, people kind of failed to realize that the countries who needed them don't have the storage capabilities. So they're like, hey, have some Pfizer, but oh, it won't work because you guys don't have the cold storage capabilities.
Yeah. Well, this is where I get kind of knotted up, is I don't know. Like the big problem from COVAX's position is bilateral negotiations that wealthy countries have had with the vaccines, rather than going in as a global community through COVAX.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's a way a democratic government would have done anything different. Like, imagine if during the 2020 debates, President Trump said, we're going to do Operation Warp Speed. We're going to have vaccines started rolling out in January. And Biden had said, I don't think we should do that. I think we should focus on an international effort. We're going to prioritize distributing vaccines globally until everybody in the world gets 20%. Then we can focus on the whole of America. We'll probably get finished up around 2023. Like, he would have killed him. He wouldn't have been able to do it.
So, right. I mean, that's the thing, is like, is it, you know, Jordan, do you feel like any country, Angela Merkel, Biden, anyone could have said, listen, guys, here's what's going to happen. Right now, there's an outbreak in India. So what we're going to do is, just instead of you getting vaccinated.
Right. You still have to wear a mask in Target. But.
Right. But right now, there's an outbreak in India. So that's what we're going to focus. Like, can you imagine politically that would have ever been remotely possible?
I mean, maybe that dreamy Justin Trudeau could have gotten it across. I mean, you know.
I can see Canadians taking it on the chin. I can see them taking it on the chin.
Right. The politest nation. Yeah, I mean, it's so tough because, right, I mean, I mean, I don't know what I would have thought if during the election that was a talking point. I mean, I feel like my spirit knows that's the right way to go, but my gut probably would have panicked. And it's so wild to read that, you know, America has vaccinations for 140% of the population. Like, we have so many more than we need. And like, we still have people that aren't taking them because they feel like yoga and crystals will heal them, or, you know, they are okay getting COVID at a motorcycle rally where Smash Mouth is playing. Like, it's just so grim to think that we have this huge vaccine stash and our boneheadiest boneheads still aren't taking it. And I'm sure there's just so many other countries who would get it in a second.
It's weird, too. And I feel like I do this with, like, worn socks, right? Where I'm like, I'm not wearing that sock anymore. Why don't I get rid of it? It's like, it's threadbare on the bottom. But I'm like, you never know. What if I really need a fucking 14th sock on my foot that's specifically this color and shape? Like, and so then I end up because we have, and this was another crazy thing about that article in The Lancet, we had a bunch of AstraZeneca that we're like not even using in this country, right? We had a whole ton of AstraZeneca. We could have given it to a bunch of other places. Here's the other crazy thing. Mexico, right? Our buddies, our NAFTA buddies, right? Like right next door, we're like, hey guys, would you mind like throwing us like a cup of sugar / some vaccines? And we were like, no. I mean, Biden said no. So the
diseases can't go north. That's not how diseases work.
True. So that. Sorry. Thank you for pointing that out, Andrew. That's absolutely
because of gravity.
But I think here's my feeling. I wonder if our better angels would have prevailed if Trump, and this is a leadership thing, if Trump hadn't been in office when COVAX was created, because we didn't really sign on in a robust way to COVAX.
We did until 2 days after Biden was sworn in. That's when we signed on to COVAX. We were not involved at all in the beginning.
We were not involved. And then when Biden came and we gave some billions and some stuff happened.
And we're starting to pass out vaccines now too.
And we're starting to, yeah, again, like we're doing stuff. Sure. It's not like we're not. But if Trump had not been in office, I think that world leaders could have come together because you needed a big guy to be involved. And the big guy in most situations is the United States, right? You needed a leadership like that to be involved to get everyone else on board so that everyone would stop behaving, you know, so selfishly. Because I do think it makes sense for, you know, health workers in every country outside of America to be vaccinated before 12 to 18 year olds in the United States. And look, I'm like desperate for my own kid to get vaccinated. I so want this to be over for my family, right? But at the same time, I understand that this is a lower risk group. Final thoughts on this, Jordan. Do you feel like this kind of global diplomacy is, I don't know, over, or is there still a chance, or like, how do you feel?
Boy, it is such a beautiful thought, and then this whole thing, you know, was done with such beautiful intentions. And like, it seems like, you know, in that article, them interviewing everyone just like, you know, believed in the goodness of humanity. And that was like, it was really beautiful. And you know, and I think obviously, like, you know, the U.S. isn't handling this very well, but like, you know, when you do see people like in LA, our mask mandate is gone, and you know, there's still people in the grocery store wearing masks just to be safe. And like, that's a really, you know, cool thing to see. Like, they don't have to do it and they're doing it. But yeah, but it's just like, we just have a 40% shithead population that, you know, it's impossible to get through to. So maybe there's something like, you know, we just need to frame it differently for them. Maybe it's something like, hey, if we send Mexico some vaccinations, you can go to that yoga retreat in Tulum over the summer. You can go. Hey, this
they're sending us magic crystals in exchange for vaccines.
Yes, they have the magic crystals we need. We charge them when Mercury is in retrograde. And then you'll all be able to go to Italy and act like drunk shitheads in August. So, yeah, I do think we just probably need to... We just need two information streams, one for nice people who want everyone to live, and then one for selfish shitheads who think that you can put a microchip into a needle.
I mean, absolutely. Why aren't governments talking to you, Jordan, with excellent ideas like that?
Yeah, hit me up, governments. Slide into my DMs. They're open.
Folks, let me know what you guys think of, would you be willing to like have not been vaccinated when you got vaccinated if it meant that poor countries that had hotspots were being vaccinated so that the pandemic globally could calm down as opposed to just locally? Let me know what you think. And I understand if the answer's no, I needed to get it when I got it. What are you, nuts? Because I understand. Andrew, you had a thought?
Real quick, one thing that we should point out is that it's not just a selflessness thing. This can be selfish as well, in that if the virus keeps percolating in the developing world and in the third world, it might mutate and come back and hit us. So it's a situation where it's not just pure altruism we're talking about here. There's also a global self-interest in making sure that it's actually knocked out.
Right, which is the situation with the Delta variant, which is why I don't understand why during the apex of the crisis with India wasn't being bombarded with free doses. And they don't even need free. I mean, they have money. So like, and they're actually, you know, one of the world's biggest serum generators or whatever. So it's like, but again, I think there was a failure of global diplomacy that led to the mutation that is the Delta variant, you know, and that we didn't even, I don't know if that's true, but I think there was a failure of, I'm just going to say there was a failure of global diplomacy that led to the Delta variant. Come back at me, people. I already don't agree that I don't know what I'm talking about, but I think that there may have been, you know, you're right. It can be as selfish as it is selfless. That we do this kind of work, that we do this kind of global work. All right, folks, let me know what you think. We're going to take a quick break to learn about our sponsors, Hoomst, we love, that keep the lights on here at Fake the Nation. And then when we come back, we'll talk about other things. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back. And before we get into topic number two, I wanted to let you guys know that I am on Patreon, as many of you have heard. You can go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. And, there's so many tiers to join. As little as $1 a month, which is, you know, doable for a lot of people. $4 and $5 a month get you some really great goodies, like free episodes of Fake the Nation. You'll hear bonus stuff only available to you, very exclusive, from people like Paula Poundstone and Judy Gold and Mo Rocca, and just all of the wonderful people like Andrew Heaton and Jordan Morris, the many wonderful people who do the show. So, please go to patreon.com/NaginFarsad and get a bunch of free stuff. Oh, we have free t-shirts and mugs, and depending on your subscription level. So it would be great if you would support the show, if you like the show, if the show has meant something to you. I would love your support. All right, let's get into it with topic number two. So the Free Britney movement came to a head last week as the actual Britney Spears made a statement for the first time, trying to get out of her conservatorship. Now, we knew that her dad controlled aspects of her life under this conservatorship, but what we didn't know is that she didn't even have control over her own body. Her doctors wouldn't let her remove her IUD. She had to get dance moves approved. She had to get expenditures approved for money that she obviously earned herself. She was so upset relaying the details of this conservatorship in court that the judge even had to ask her to calm down. Britney makes millions of dollars and pays for the livelihood of tons of people, but she doesn't get to control any of that. And my question to you guys is, what the fuck? You know, yeah. Just let's start right there. I mean, how did you know about this? What did you think, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I am a straight white guy. Who listens mainly to rock music. So okay. I know.
I noted the Smash Mouth reference earlier.
You'll be shocked to know there's an Elvis Costello poster in my living room. I know. Everyone's agog. So, you know, I have made Britney Spears jokes. You know, I have made jokes about, you know, her being crazy. I've made jokes about her outfits being slutty, sure, or something, and this whole thing has been kind of hard to, you know, realize that, hey, I was part of this problem. Like, you know, the reason that she had that kind of rough period was just largely because the public wouldn't stop bothering her, you know, like the reason that, you know, she had an unfortunate period was just because of how shitty the public was to her. And it was hard to kind of think about how I was, you know, like part of that, how I, you know, just thought it was okay because someone is, you know, a pop star, someone is famous. You can just say whatever you want to about them and assume that their life is great because they're rich. And it's like, you totally can't do that. And something kind of positive that came out of learning about all this is that, you know, realizing that Britney Spears has been like consistently putting out music, you know, since the 90s. And it fucking rules. Britney Spears is great, and her like recent music is awesome. I like put on her most recent album. There's a song called Mood Ring that is great. There's a really horny song called Slumber Party that is awesome. There's a song with the Backstreet Boys called Energy, and they all fucking rule. She's a great performer. She's so talented. It made me want to go see her in Vegas. And like, yeah, she's like a treasure. And the fact that, you know, she's surrounded by these, you know, awful money grubbing shitheads who want to control her body is like so terrible. But the fact that she still manages to like put out great art like this is just a testament to how great she is. And like, I feel bad that I was a, you know, rockist teenager who thought I was too punk rock to appreciate her, you know, back at the, like the height of her fame. But I'm like, you know, it's nice that her fans are so passionate that they are, you know, trying to bring awareness to this, and also just to her, who is great. And I think someone who was just the target of jokes for so long, but, you know, should be like celebrated as a treasure. Someone we should all go see Britney in Vegas. I mean, I would love to do that. And I, you know, just as a straight white comedy guy who is too glib about things sometimes, yeah, it's just been kind of nice to have an excuse to think about how I use jokes and how I treat people.
Yeah, I mean, the Hulu documentary we actually did, you can see on Instagram, an Instagram live conversation I had with Kendra Cunningham about the Hulu documentary on framing Britney Spears. And the way that the media treated her was insane. And, you know, I was a teenager. I didn't listen to Britney Spears, you know what I mean? And even now, I only have passing interest in her stuff or whatever, but I would love to see her in concert because she is the consummate performer. And Andrew, I wonder, there's something about the way we treated women since the beginning of fucking time.
Sure, yeah.
Which has been just unfair, right? Just to put it mildly. Mm-hmm. But there's also a way that we sort of treat performers at her level as, there's something about shaking your ass and singing like the way she does, that we sort of put in we don't necessarily put that in like a skill bucket. Like, oh, that person is like such a craftsperson and so skilled and so, you know, performing at the highest levels, unless they're also a writer, you know? So once you add like writer to something, then for some reason we treat them with so much more esteem. But so there's something about her particular bucket of skills that we didn't treat with esteem, even though I, you know, challenge any of these motherfuckers to do what she does on stage and to have that kind of longevity and to have that
Jeff
kind of resilience.
Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, shake your ass with a giant snake. You can't.
Oh, no, exactly. You can't.
You can't do it, Tweedy. Sorry.
So Andrew, what is it about this particular situation also that she felt like she couldn't get out of it? That she hadn't talked about it publicly until now.
Oh, first of all, you all bring up wonderful points. And Jordan, it's really like, I'm sure I would have said horrible things about Britney Spears. I'm just such a nerd that I didn't know much about pop culture, so I've limited myself mostly to Star Trek celebrities, but I would have done that.
And so, you owe Jonathan Frakes an apology. I said some horrible things about Frakes.
I sucker punched him at an Applebee's one time, and I've never lived it down. But it's nice to admit that we all share some culpability in this for the weird fetishization and dehumanization of celebrities, where we all have this tendency to do that. Like we're all public performing individuals. I assume that we all get negative feedback sometimes. And while I can shake it off, and I get very little negative feedback because I'm nice and not very well known or talented, so I don't have to deal with it too much. I'm always kind of surprised at like just someone will say something and I'm like, you know, I'm a person, right? Did you not like, does it not occur to you that like I've, you know, got friends and family think about this stuff. So that's absolutely true. I think, again, I don't know pop culture that well, but like I think Kim Kardashian's another example of what you were talking about, Nagin, of somebody is professionally pretty and professionally sexy and therefore they are contemptible. And like I look at her and think like, well, I'm not really into any of this stuff and I don't watch reality TV. But from my perspective, the only thing I've seen her do the last few years is get people out of prison for smoking pot. So I applaud her. And unless you want to do that, I don't really think you have a leg to stand on because she's doing good stuff. And like, yes, she's making a lot of money by being hot, but like she's fine. The issue for me that I think is interesting for Britney specifically is the kind of legal threshold that they seem to be operating under, which I found baffling. Like, I understand if we're living in feudal Europe, if we're like, well, women are property. And the purpose of a woman is to have a dowry, and I own her, and then I will marry her off to some squire. Like, I at least understand the logic. While I want to be on the record here, I'm against women being a form of chattel.
Thank you for clarifying.
Hot takes keep coming.
I have revised and apologized for my previous position.
Wow.
It's been a very weird week, but I've come out of the other side. The threshold is what I find very interesting, because the more I read about this, it's like, well, like, you know, she would make bad business decisions. She would make poor interpersonal decisions. And I'm like, if that if that were the threshold for your dad taking over your life of bad business decisions and poor, I would have been a guardian years ago. Like, of course, during 2020, when I was drinking a bucket of scotch in a bathtub, sobbing, eating Oreos out of a bowl with a ladle because I couldn't do dishes. Of course I should have had a guarantor. So that I find very weird. And I look at this and I'm like, first of all, I don't know California guardianship laws. I'm sure they're very, very complex. But it seems to me that the benefit of the doubt should be you're sane. You should have to really prove somebody's insane. Secondly, if you're going to do it, the threshold should be this person literally cannot function in society and is going to be criminally taken advantage of or will wind up in prison or an insane asylum. That should be the level we're at. If it's just, I don't think she's optimizing her career, that is not sufficient. I think she's dating the wrong guys, not sufficient.
Not sufficient. It was crazy because she wasn't even allowed to retain her own counsel because of medical records that were also kept from the counsel that she was trying to keep. So it's like, for reasons that we don't even, that weren't clear to her at the time, she was put under this conservatorship. And then the lawyer that works with Jamie Spears, which is her dad, who is the conservator, co-conservator, she had said in the documentary, in my entire career, I've never seen someone get out of a conservatorship. Because the thing is, the idea is that also you should be able to graduate out of it. Like, let's say, for the sake of argument, that she did something more insane than just shaving her head at a salon or whatever. Remember that thing she shaved her head? Or remember she, like, hit a car because paparazzi couldn't stop bothering her. And it was like, you know, anyway. Let's say it was beyond that, and it was, you know, and there was some actual, you know, medical reason that she was put under the conservatorship. I mean, however many years of a Vegas residency later, where she's performing at the highest of her abilities, of anyone's abilities.
How many number one albums do you have to record?
Do you need to make in order to prove that you can, right? I mean, it's great. So how do you graduate out of it? And the fact that this one lawyer whose job it is to handle these conservatorships can't even summon one example of a person graduating out of these conservatorships is really alarming.
Yeah.
Because what, you know, with the reading that I sent you guys, one of the things that they really stressed in every article was that you completely lose your civil liberties. Right? And that shouldn't be undertaken lightly. And again, I don't know all the details, blah, blah, blah. But it does feel like that aspect of this was not considered very heavily. And it does seem that the fame part of it, where the media was that blowing up little incidents to make them seem bigger, was also playing into like how a judge may have made a decision, which is just truly unfortunate. So Jordan, you were going to say?
Yeah. I mean, there's a great quote in one of the articles you sent around and, you know, it feels like it kind of sums up the whole thing. It really put it in perspective for me. It's like, the ability to make bad decisions for non-disabled people is considered a normal part of the human experience. And I think that is just like, yes, that is so perfect. It's like, yes, perhaps Britney Spears had a tough time at one point because of how much media pressure there was on her and, you know, whatever. Maybe dating Kevin Federline wasn't the best thing to do, but like, yeah.
I regret it.
Yeah, sure. Hey, listen, we all, he's a charmer. He's a charmer.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was fun, but it was fun until it wasn't.
Sure, exactly.
But I'll tell you, who amongst us doesn't have a Kevin Federline-esque?
Listen, if if making some bad decisions in your 20s is grounds for having your civil liberties taken away, there was a time in my life where I was drinking a case of Bud Light Platinum a night and sleeping with people I was in an improv group with.
Hmm. There it is.
By that rationale,
that's your Kevin Federline moment. Yeah.
That was my Federline. I was Federlining in that moment. I mean, you know, obviously we all have tough times. We all have times we're not proud of. And, you know, if you're a media star and you have paparazzi following you everywhere, it's just amplified. And yeah, I think she's more than proved that she's not only capable but extraordinary, like an extraordinary person.
Right. And it's so sad to have like you said, we've all Federlined, but her Federline got so blown up And if I was talked about by my ex-boy, like if you guys knew me from these ex-boyfriends and I couldn't rise above that ever, you know, that would be a really horrible existence for me. The media had such a huge role to play in this, and they continue to be, I think, what's interesting, I guess, here's my question for you, Andrew. Do you feel like things have changed and has the media changed? Because even Britney Spears mentioned someone like Miley Cyrus having episodes, right? Public episodes that people talk about, but also that people get over. I mean, part of it is maybe the media cycle has also evolved in a way that stories stuck stronger then. I don't know. What do you think,
Andrew? Well, it's hard for me to get a read on what media coverage of celebrities is like, because so few of them involve Star Trek that I don't really am that into it. I will say,
but you are up on all the latest Scott Bakula news.
Oh yeah exactly, yeah, like, man, if George Takei and his husband break up, I'll know about it in a heartbeat. I don't know that the media is significantly different. Another thing that I think is worth pointing out is that when guys flip out that are celebrities, they tend to flip out in a different way, and it's also interpreted differently. So if I'm a celebrity and I flip out, presumably what I do based on male celebrities that go crazy, I will get really drunk, punch somebody, and probably say something anti-Semitic. And that will not be a sign that I am crazy. It will be a sign that I'm having an episode or I'm bad or something like that. Like, there's a lot of the time where anger is interpreted as a sort of legitimate emotion for men, but flipping out in a non-angry manner is crazy if women do it. And I think that the media interpretation is different in that regard. And I don't know if that's gotten better.
Yeah, with you know, male celebrities and certainly male musicians, like, weird public behavior is kind of like a sign of their genius, you know? Like, if they do something crazy in public, it's just like, because they're on another level, man. It's fucking 4D chess.
Like, Kanye, I think when Kanye does crazy stuff, he's frequently interpreted as just being, well, he's a genius, and so he's going to think outside the box.
Yeah, and I do, I will say that I do think maybe, you know, we treat Kanye similarly to Britney, in that, you know, maybe he's, you know, we use him as a punchline a little too frequently when maybe he does have, you know, legitimate mental health issues that need to be taken care of. But certainly he gets a genius pass.
Right. And no one's talking about a conservatorship for Kanye.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
So I think he's still getting, like, and, you know, also our understanding of mental health is so different, and I think yes, Kanye has been a punchline, but he's also been generally, there's been more sympathy,
of course,
about
his
situation.
Yeah, he's yes, absolutely.
Folks, let me know what you think. This is just crazy, and let's all meet in Vegas and go
and help her escape. Everybody, bring a rope ladder and some hot air balloons, and we're gonna get her.
The minute she's out of her conservatorship, let's meet in Vegas so she can control the money from our ticket sales. Yeah. That's what I would like to see happen.
Patrick Stewart, if you're out there, we need your help. Guy who played Data, I forget his name.
Brent Spiner.
Brent Spiner, thank you.
Andrew needs more celebrity gossip specifically tailored to him. Mm-hmm. Folks, let's move on to topic number 3. We read a piece in the New York Times called Dear Class of 2021, Don't Do Your Homework, Live Your Life by Kara Swisher. This piece is based on a commencement speech that Swisher gave. And in it, she says that she used to tell her kids all the time not to do their homework. Quote, when they had a choice to do something I felt was far more interesting for them. Since I have covered the major moments in the digital age, those opportunities were a myriad for them, especially to be able to talk with the Thomas Edisons and Grace Hoppers of our time. A hike across a Golden Gate Bridge with a person who helped invent the iPhone. Don't do your homework. A visit to a cool new autonomous car company run by a truly quirky young investor I just met named Elon Musk. Don't do your homework. That is the crux of her advice to the young'uns. There's some other stuff that we'll get into, but just at first blush, what did you think?
I wish I could. I think I would couple that with, like, if I could go back in time and talk to myself at, like, age 10, I'd be like, don't do your homework. Also, don't play Nintendo so much. Like, I do wish, like, because it's, I think that part of it's the productive, like, it doesn't have to be specifically focused productivity, but just, like, if I could go back in time and be like, if you learn guitar right now, you will always have a girlfriend. I'm telling you, please learn the guitar. No one cares about Mario. The princess isn't real. So I would do that. The other thing is, I generally I like encouraging kids to be insubordinate to educational authorities. I get a kick out of that. Like, I'm basically from a Norman Rockwell painting, and so I kind of resent the intense restraints that were there. Like, if I were giving a high school commencement address, I think I would, or maybe to the class that's in there, I would be like, hey, if a teacher can't tell you why you have to learn something, you don't have to take it seriously. They should have to be able to tell you why that this is a relevant subject to you. Like, I still don't know why I took trigonometry. I think it's to make rockets to kill Russians, but I don't know. I still don't know. And so I never really got invested in it.
That, everything you just said was like, in this article, was upsetting my status as a model minority and children of immigrants whose entire thing was like, you better get perfect grades. And like, you know what I mean? And like, I'm hard pressed to like, I have a hard time buying anything that you just said, Heaton. But okay, Jordan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a really cool, fun piece, and definitely like the spirit of it, I think, is right on that, like, you know, when those extraordinary life experiences come up, you have to take them. You know, I was offered a free ticket to Burning Man once. I took it. A stranger washed my taint. It was beautiful. I'm glad I did it. I showed my balls for a snow cone, and it was the best snow cone I've ever had. Anyway,
right.
So I am living proof that this can work, but I do also kind of hear what you're saying in that, you know, for good boys and girls and children, which I was one of, the idea of not following the rules makes me kind of stressed out. And I think, Andrew, you totally had a great point. If I did, you know, shunt off homework as a kid, like, that time probably wouldn't have been, you know, reflecting in the forest like Thoreau. It would have been playing Mortal Kombat and having erotic fantasies about the fly girls from In Living Color. That would be how I would spend that time. I think homework obviously like is annoying, and I think we probably do give kids too much of it. But like, I have ADHD, and I had it as a kid. I was diagnosed as a kid of having it. And I think that like learning to like sit down and write a book report is the reason that I can, you know, sit down and write something for my job. So I think there is something to kind of like, you know, creating a space where kids can learn to like finish a task and enjoy work and maybe have fun with stuff like that. I'm in favor of going out and, you know, grabbing life by the what have yous, by the life privates.
By the taint.
Grab life by the taint, have a stranger wash it for you. I liked the piece, but you know, I don't know that I would stump for a complete abolishment of the homework industrial complex.
Wait a minute. Am I the cool, radical, wearing a leather jacket, don't do your homework guy, and you two are the eat your vegetables? This has literally never happened to me before in my entire life. I am so excited.
You're the Fonzie in the room.
I am so excited. I'm going to lean into this. I'm going to absolutely lean into this.
Yeah, I mean, okay, because it just, the entire commencement speech stressed me out a little bit. And because I was also like, but I mean, you have to do your homework or else your entire life like will go on the wrong path.
How will mom be proud of you? How will you make mom proud? We have to
exactly.
Do it.
Exactly. No, your life is not measured by experiences. It's measured in report cards. What are you doing? You know what I mean? So like, I know, which is obviously like there's something wrong with me, but but let me get to this next point, which I think kind of brings up some of my stress. She quotes Steve Jobs a lot, actually, in this commencement speech. And she said
great
that Steve Jobs said this, when I was 17, I read a quote that went something like, if you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right. This is, again, Steve Jobs. It made an impression on me. And since then, for the past 33 years, I have looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something. Now, here's the thing. That's like a quote from Steve Jobs. And I just, part of me wonders with all of these bromides, that's just not how life is for most people.
You know
that,
what
also
I mean?
Sounds again, exhausting. Again, that sounds exhausting to live every day like it's your. Oh my! I gotta go hang gliding.
Right.
And call my mom for an hour and drink the best whiskey in the world, and then have an orgasm.
Yeah.
This is like, oh my god!
Nude yoga on a peak again. You know what?
I can tell you this: I'm never gonna do taxes if I think I'm gonna die the next day. They're the last thing I'm ever gonna do.
Right. Yeah. I do agree. I think this philosophy. There is a little bit of privilege. You know, assumed.
Oh, I mean, there's a ton of privilege. So here's my thing, right. I mean, and look, and I get it. It's a commencement address. It's being addressed to 18-year-olds in high school who have the world ahead of them. So you want them to dream and think ridiculously. But I think there's something I know about Steve Jobs from the unauthorized biopic, which is that he was maybe not that great to his family. Sure. So I think the other question is, do you look at yourself in the mirror and say, was I fucking kind and good to people today? And if the answer is no, too many days in a row, I'm a dick and I need to change.
I very much want to hear Nagin's commencement speech. I would like for you to rewrite this entire thing.
Yeah, hell yeah. Seniors 2021.
Yeah. Quit being dickheads. Wait, can I play cool substitute teacher who's like giving you guys underage beer for a moment?
Do it, man. Turn the chair backwards.
Okay.
Sit down on the chair backwards.
Sitting down on the chair. Hey guys, like just get your worksheets done, and then we can hang out and play chess and stuff, right?
Mr. Heaton's my dad. Call me Andrew.
yeah. Call me Mr. H. Right. All right. So this is where I get a little conspiratorial. So universal education, great, good, big fan, very, very good thing. However, like part of the method that we brought into the United States that we've built universal education on, because we didn't have universal education previously, is a guy named Horace Mann. He was the Secretary of Education for Massachusetts, went to Prussia where they had universal education. And he was like, this is great. It's very scientific. It's a factory model where they treat kids like products, where they know they're going to be out at a certain age, which we had not previously done, and everybody gets it. Really fantastic. But what the Prussians were trying to solve for at the time, the reason they developed universal education was they felt that they kept losing wars because people were thinking too much for themselves, and they didn't have sufficient deference to authority. And so what they were doing was, to a great extent, just disciplining children to obey authority figures and to appreciate the state and to appreciate the army and all of those things. I've never been an educator. I have been a substitute teacher. And it did seem to me that part of my job was basically conditioning children to sit at a little desk for 8 hours a day filling out slips of paper, and just so they wouldn't go crazy when we threw them into the workforce. And so I don't know. Like, kids, try and figure out when they're actually teaching you versus conditioning you.
Right. And I mean, I think it is good, like the thing you said early on of like, if your teacher can't answer why you're learning something, like there should be real world applications to everything that we learn, you know, or even like real, even if they kind of remain abstract, but like this will help you understand the abstract world. That's why we're learning it. You know, the distance between stars is important because this is what's happening and you should know. Like teachers should be able to answer that question so that they don't feel conditioned, so that they do feel, you know, enriched. And I think that's absolutely right. And I also think that it's like it's also very American that everything should be so special, or that everyone should feel like they're the next Thomas Edison. Like there are ways of being like a good, an extraordinary person without being the next Thomas Edison, you know? And it's obviously commencement speeches are not the place for that rhetoric, but maybe they are. I don't know. Maybe we need to start emphasizing that.
Some of you will be great baristas. Some of you will be the best barista at your fills.
No, some of you will be the best fucking neighbors, friends, lovers,
don't define
sons,
yourself entirely
daughters.
By your profession. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, like just, I don't know. I mean, and maybe that's something to take away, that just as much as we're here for an education, we're here to learn how to play nice together.
Yeah,
and
that's
for
true.
18 years, I hope you did that. And I think, and going forward for the rest of your life, I hope you do that. Play well with your fellow man or whatever, and woman. Anyways, I don't know. Folks, let me know what you think of this commencement speech, of these points that were made. Are you going to tell your children not to do their homework? Let me know what you think. Oh, my gosh. Jordan, Andrew, that is the end of the show.
It was a journey.
Feel? Oh, it really was.
I think we covered everything. We covered all the things.
And solved everything. Well done, guys.
You're welcome, world.
Also, we finally created a new pipeline for governments to talk to Jordan.
Yes.
Which previously...
You mean Governor Jordan, Governor Morris.
Yes, Governor Morris Jordan. Of the great state of Arizona will be conquering Florida soon.
Nutmeg state.
Yeah, so just the world government, slide into my DMs. Guam, are you out there?
He has ideas. Guys, he has ideas. So I would love for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the wonderful things that you do. Andrew Heaton, where do they do that?
Hey, I host my own podcast. It's called The Political Orphanage. I do a lot of exploring of policy and news and how people think, and I keep it nonpartisan and friendly. So if you like exploring ideas, come explore ideas with me at The Political Orphanage. And I have a book coming out very soon. It is called Los Angeles is Hideous, Poems About an Ugly City. Now, if you're in Los Angeles, you probably won't like this that much. But if you just left Los Angeles, as I did, I think it will make you feel very good about your life decisions. So that comes out on July 12th, and it's available for pre-order now.
And there's also that subset of the population in Los Angeles that people who have moved to Los Angeles and then talk about it begrudgingly live there, but for years, and then complain about it all the time. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is another
I think you'd enjoy
group
the
that
book
will
too,
really
people.
Like your book.
Yeah.
Get Andrew Heaton's book. Subscribe to his podcast. Everything he does is so wonderful and funny and bright and refreshing. You'll enjoy every single piece of it. Jordan Morris, where do people follow you?
You can follow me, and if you're a world government, DM me on Twitter at Jordan_Morris. And I have a graphic novel coming out that I co-wrote. It is called Bubble. I co-wrote it with a great comedy writer named Sarah Morgan. The great comics artist Tony Cliff does the art, and Natalie Reese does the colors. Just a real cool collection of comics and comedy pros got together to make this thing. It's called Bubble. It's a sci-fi comedy about a kind of near future where everybody lives in these dome cities. Our heroes are these kind of hipsters who live in a little domed version of Silver Lake or Brooklyn, and they are part of this kind of life and death gig economy where they have to fight monsters to survive. And it's got a lot of penis jokes and gore and monsters and robots. And if you like comics, I think you'll like it. If you've never read a comic, it does not require any additional information. You can just pick it up and enjoy. And that is available July 13th. And much like Andrew's book, you can pre-order it now. That is a really helpful thing for books. So maybe give your local indie bookstore or comic book store a call, or your local library. Tell them you want Bubble, and all those places will pre-order it up for you so you can have it on the 13th.
Absolutely. And people don't talk about comic book graphic novels as being good beach reads, but what you described sounds like an excellent beach read. So
no, thanks.
If you're going on that
post-pandemic vacation and you want something you could comics, they're quicker to read than books, so you could probably
you're more likely to finish them.
Probably a couple trips poolside and you can knock this thing out.
It's exciting.
It's called Bubble, and I think you'll like it.
Folks, you know where to find me, and you know how to access all the things that I do. But what I would really like to do right now is thank all of the wonderful people that make this show a possibility. That's our wonderful producer, Julia Linden, our fantastic audio engineer, Stephanie Aguilar, and all of the wonderful people at HeadGum who make this show possible. Our theme music was written by Gabby Alter. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. You can email us at fakethenation@headgum.com with your ideas about guests we should be having on, topics we should be chatting about. You can join the Patreon for bonus content and so much more. Again, that's patreon.com/NagineFarsad. Thanks, folks, for listening to the show. We'll be back in your earballs next week.
The That was a HeadGum Podcast.